on the road. Hitting the button. Wait for the green light.
Get the nerd!
Well, if you weren't awake yet, you should be now, because that is one loud intro to Bid Nerds, your daily nerd out on the most interesting cars of the day and all the automotive enthusiast auction sites, including Bring a Trailer, P Car Market, Rad for Sale, and Cars and Bids, as well as some other ones every now and then. My name is John Polnick. I'm your host of Bid Nerds, as well as my partner right over there, Michael Deeb. Good morning, Michael Deeb. How are you?
I'm excellent, JP. It's overcast today, though. It's really dark in studio here. I barely see anything. Like my light. Yeah, my light is in front of me, but then everything else is like, I don't know, like backlit. I don't know. It's just weird. It's really dark. It feels like a winter day.
Well, you are in San Francisco, and that is kind of the thing, right?
It's the middle of summer. It's totally overcast.
The coldest winter I ever spent was a summer in San Francisco. There you go.
Yeah, he was talking about June. For sure, he was talking about June. June's the worst. It's like everybody else that you see, especially now with the emergence of social media, everybody you see is out in the sun. And in San Francisco, June is like LA. It's June gloom. It's crappy weather. We don't get nice weather until August.
Yeah, you know, I was actually in LA over the weekend, and it was a little, we had the morning kind of, what is it, the marine layer coming in. And I got to tell you, it was fantastic.
Yeah. I know,
coming
right?
Coming from 115 so degrees, we were like, okay, I'll take that, no problem, because we don't have a shortage of sun here in Las Vegas. Yeah. All right, guys, so here's what we do on this show. We whittle through all of the auction sites and all of the individual cars that are being auctioned off today, and we narrow it down to the most interesting ones. We nerd out about those particular cars, and then we make predictions as to what we think those cars will sell for when their auctions close today. Every single one of the cars we talk about are cars that are closing today. When we make those predictions, we're basically saying, hey, here's a car, here's all the things about the car, here's how much we think it's going to hammer for, and then that's out there. People know what we said, and they can come back to us and say, hey, you said X, you're an idiot. And so we get that all the time, right? And not only do we
the
get
idiot
that
part.
From people, we start the show with the idiot part. You know, the first thing we always do is we go back and we review the cars from yesterday, and we see how we did on our predictions, and we're never, ever, ever right. Every now and then we are, but it's pretty rare. We call those yankees, but we had a pretty interesting lot of cars yesterday. We'll get those in just a second. But first, we want to make sure that you hit the subscribe, like, and notification button. And we also want to encourage you guys to go out there. If you're watching the show, you're probably already a subscriber, and we super duper appreciate you because you're a nerd just like us. Look, you want to help out the nerds? You want to help out Nerd Nation? Get over there to the other auction sites. Go on to Bring a Trailer. Go on to P Car Market. Go on to Cars
and Bids.
And in the comments below the cars that we talk about, say that you heard about the car on Bid Nerds.
On our show.
On the show on YouTube. And spread the word there, because that's really where our other people are. And a lot of people there don't know about us yet. So we want to help them out.
We're asking the nerd herd to direct traffic to our site.
That is correct. All right, so let's get to yesterday's cars. We had a pretty darn cool lineup of cars. We had three cars from Rad for Sale, and Rad for Sale is we're going to talk about them quite a bit. And boy, their particular car, this one car was pretty. I thought was pretty darn cool.
The 944.
The 944. Yeah.
Yeah, really nice car, JP. This car was down, if I remember correctly, in Aptus, which is basically right next door to Santa Cruz, which is where our fun-loving Radwood and DWA sort of headquarters are located. That's a spiritual hub of all those fun things. This car has to be part of their circle of friends at the very least. Really cool car, JP. It's an 86 944 turbo with just over 100,000 miles. If I remember, it's like 113 or 135. It's not a ton of miles. It's not a scary amount of miles. White car, white wheels, which are totally period correct, all black interior, manual transmission, a lot to like here. The owner of the car's had it for 3 years, and if I remember, they said they spent about $10,000 over those 3 years in maintenance costs. So all of the services and things that you would expect on a sort of six-figure-in-miles car have kind of been done and updated, and one would think that this car is probably good to go for the next couple of years without having to spend sort of a surprising amount of money on maintenance. It is a Porsche, and it is old. So I will give you that. Our car was sitting, I don't know, I think around $10,000 when we looked at it yesterday. And what was interesting, I went high on the car. I thought it was nice. I thought it's the right car on the right platform, in the right spirit of occasion, as they like to say, with the martini livery and all the rally decals on the window. JP and I each own air-cooled 911s from the same era, and our cars are kitted out the same way. So it's definitely one of the guy's cars, you know what I mean? So I went high on it. I said 17,000, and I'm not ashamed of that bid. I think that the car could possibly be worth that. It's hard when you're not touching the car. JP was a little more conservative. You said 15. What's interesting, JP, is after we looked at the car, and I think it was like at around 10-2 or something like that. Somebody threw a knockout bid right around the close of auction, and the bid was $1,800 over where it was previously, bringing the total amount to $12,944. Well, nobody ever went on top of that bid. That knockout bid did the trick, and the car sold at that number, $12,944. So about 13 grand. JP, that was your win, but what do you think about, one, a knockout bid on Rad for Sale, which I don't recall any of the auctions seeing something. This wasn't a powerful one, but it worked, right? The guy went up $2,000 and basically got it. And then what do you think of 13 grand for a, like, you know, 130,000 mile 86 turbo? Is that red on the money? I mean, are we delusional sometimes because we love Porsche so much we overvalue them? Is that really happening here, or you know, is this pragmatic response?
This 944 for a turbo is not the nicest one out there. I mean, it's got some little micro cracks in the dash, which, you know, is a big deal killer for some people like you and me.
Yeah. We also know the professor at Sierra Madre who can get you a new dash. So it doesn't have to be a deal breaker. It's just a pain in the ass that we never want to deal with.
Yeah, and this one really isn't bad. I mean, they're micro cracks. They're not big old cracks. Usually when you see 944 with cracks, it's awful. This car overall seemed like a great driver car, and I think for that money, that was kind of a steal.
That's what I thought.
Yeah,
and good price.
Know, yeah, that was a very good price. I mean, I think $15,000 to $18,000 is what you. If this car were listed on something like Renlist or PCA's classifieds, or if you
Pelican Parts,
Craigslist or Marketplace on Facebook or something like that, all the other places that you would see a car like this listed, you're going to see it listed for somewhere between $15,000 and $20,000. The crack smokers that think that every Porsche is worth all the money in the world are going to list it for $22,000, and
no way.
You know, I mean, there's that's just not happening unless it's a hermetically sealed one, and even then that's not really happening. So this car I think is just a spectacular value at just under $13,000. We don't see big bid volumes on Rad for Sale, and you know, Rad for Sale I think has to, they're at a critical moment right now where they're really going to have to, I think, right their ship, because this car should have brought more money. If it were on P-Car Market, this car would have definitely brought more money. I mean, it's crazy to say that now, but I think we're at a shift where things are starting to, you know, everyone's kind of finding their way. And let's talk about a couple of the other cars from Rad for Sale, because these were pretty interesting too.
Right. So they had two other cars. And what I liked about the selection of cars that all closed yesterday is they were all really kind of enthusiast driver's cars. Mm-hmm. They do sell cars from the spirit of occasion that, are interesting cars, but not necessarily driver's cars. So this one that you have teed up, JP, is an 83 Mark I VW Rabbit GTI. This car was showing about 200,000 miles, but the listing offered it as true mileage unknown. interesting thing. Again, a little bit of money was spent on the cosmetics here. They found a new fabric that looked correct to the period that would have been in the Volkswagen originally, and recovered the seats. They said they redid the headliner, although as you were going through the photos, we could see where the headliner sort of tucks into like the A and C pillars. It didn't look like it was that well done. But the suspension had been refreshed with some new control arms and an H&R cup kit. So I imagine this car probably drives pretty nice. But it shows signs of wear and tear. It's a 200,000 mile car at least, and it looks like it's got 200,000 miles on the exterior. You know, it's not a perfect example. That being said, where do you go find a Mark I GTI that's even this nice? There's just not that many survivors left, which is really hard to imagine because these cars were so popular when you and I were in high school. All right, with all that mouthful of things being said, I really believed in this one. I thought this car had a chance to really get close to 10 grand. So I said 9,500. Again, you'd be more pragmatic, said 8,500. Our car was bid up to $7,000, but it failed to sell at that number, which means the consigner, I think, maybe had an unrealistic idea of what the car is worth. And so, you know, it begs the question, is somebody at Rad for Sale policing the site by negotiating with the potential consigners before the cars are agreed to be run on the site? Because I think 7,000 should have sold for what this car is. I know this guy would love to get all his money back, but you got to be realistic. Do we think now that it failed to sell on Rad for Sale at 7 grand, he's going to get 7 grand somewhere else? JP, I feel like you know this market a little better than I do.
I do. I think a Mark One, even one that's in this condition, which when I say this condition, I don't mean bad and I don't mean good. This car is in driver condition. I mean, right. It's a fantastic, like the first impression of this car on the site, the photos are great. This is one of those that where everything was done correct. I think it was listed really, really well. And this car should have brought the 10,000 or better, because
it's all stock basically.
It's pretty much stock. Yeah, it's got a bunch of miles, but you know, these are pretty bulletproof, and it's got the maintenance and blah 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 blah. I mean, it's a 10-footer, and it's hard to get better than a 10-footer on a car like. I mean, they're just
200,000 miles. Yeah.
You know, there was one at the Pelican Parts event this weekend in LA, and you know, there was $1 million Porsches all over the place, and you know, everyone was clamoring around the Mark One GTI.
Isn't that
great? These cars are hot. Of all the Volkswagens, this one should have done better. I think the problem here is that, unfortunately, Rad for Sale has not gotten enough cars for sale on their site, so people are not checking their site regularly. And because people aren't checking, they may have a decent enough audience. I don't know how many users they have. I don't know how many people are consistently going to their page every day. But I know personally, anecdotally, that, you know, I want to go there and see, hey, what's Rad for Sale got today? And you go there and there's nothing for sale that day. The next thing isn't for sale for another couple days. Well, that doesn't make you want to come back the next day, because you're like, oh, no, there was nothing there for the next day. And then a couple days later, you're like, now it's out of mind, because you're always like, well, their next auction isn't for a few days, but you don't exactly remember when that next auction was. And so now you're just not going in a habit. So I don't know if it's a matter of spacing these cars out.
That was my argument yesterday. Yeah. You got three cars. You just sewed up most of a week. Like, you got to spread them out. And they're like, oh, we just want to get them up right away. And I personally, and I mean, I have, you know, 2 minutes of experience in the auction business with Lance. I don't know. I would have done it differently. That's just me. But
yeah, I know that they're also very, you know, look, I have a car for sale. I have the only other car for sale on Rad for Sale that's closing this week. My Jeep is on their site, and that'll close on Friday. I don't know what's going to happen. We've seen some pretty big numbers in the early stage of Rad for Sale during their honeymoon, and now it's time for those guys to really kind of step up. And I think at this point, they're going to need to increase their marketing budget, because I think we've seen with other auction sites that you can't just like rest on your laurels. You got to get the message out. You know, Doug Murrow is putting out millions of commercials every darn day. How can you compete with that?
Well, and what's the reserve on your car? Like 45,000? I think you got a good shot, man. You're going to be great. You'll be fine.
It's a
You'll be
little
fine.
Lower than that. It's a little lower than that.
We'll just wait and see, man. Wait and see. 45 is right there, man. You're right there.
Yeah, yeah, buddy. Well, there was even – and there was another car. Now, this is the one that I think that's important to talk about because this M3 that they had, this isn't just any M3. This is a lightweight, right? What do they call these?
Right. Yeah, yep, lightweight. That's it.
Yeah.
No, lightweight. You were right the first time. It's a 1995 3-liter lightweight. No sunroof, no air conditioning, no sound deadening, no radio. And then a bunch of trick parts to make these cars handle better. They had their lightest set of wheels. And believe it or not, JP, the 115 or 125 that they brought to the United States, BMW bench tests all their motors before they're put into service in any of their cars. So in 1995, there were a team of engineers that as they were bench testing the motors that were putting out the best horsepower with the least amount of vibration were hand selected and pulled from the assembly line to be put into service for the lightweights. Imagine that kind of attention to detail. So each one of the motors in a lightweight was hand picked off the assembly line for overperforming. That's pretty rad.
Yeah,
really cool. Now, this particular car has had a had very experienced life. This car was run. It had a roll bar in it, 5-point harness, and coilovers. This car was run on the track. I can't say that it was raced, but it was definitely tracked. But that's what these cars were intended to do. And then the guy spent a bunch of money, $16,000, to return the car to stock. And there's still a few little trick parts in the intake and the cam that are left in the motor. And so if this car still passes smog, it's probably making even more than the 240 stock horsepower. This is probably like a 265 horsepower car. And I imagine it scoots. They are 150 pounds lighter than the regular ones. So with that, you know, these have really jumped in value, especially since Paul Walker passed away and he had collected a bunch of these. These cars have been synonymous with him, and I think they're bringing really big money. So a 35,000-mile example that's been returned to stock, you know, should be a six-figure car on some sites. But I thought at least up to the high 80s, 90,000. So I went 84, you went 89. This car went to 61,500 where it failed to sell. Now, this is – I don't want to say polarizing, but it appeals to a very small window of enthusiasts who really likes to drive, has a bunch of money, and then wouldn't care about having the nicest particular one because this one isn't. So this result of the three, it doesn't surprise me. Like, that's the one that's the least surprising. 13 grand for a really nice 944 turbo. I thought it would have brought a little more. I really did. That's why I've been so high on that. But this one, at 61, failing to sale, failing to find that buyer who wanted it that bad, I'm not terribly surprised by that. This is a very niche car, JP, and I think we have to take that with a grain of salt, right?
Well, yeah, but I mean, that's where platform comes in. Is this the car that, I mean, but look, this same seller, was it LBI? Is that the name of the dealership?
LBI and LBI? Philly. Yeah, they could go anywhere with their cars, and they continued to come to Rad for Sale.
Yeah, and they had the first or one of the first cars on Rad for Sale. They had that 944 cup car.
Yep.
And that thing brought great money. I mean, that brought big money, and that was
80 something.
Yeah, and that was in, you know, the honeymoon. So you got to hand it to these LBI guys going, okay, we believe in the Radwood guys. You know, and look, full disclosure, we're friends with all the Radwood guys. We want them to succeed, and we think they can.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I can see people saying, yeah, we're going to keep giving these guys a shot. I think that people will continue to root for Radwood, and hopefully more people will come out and see the cars that they have. In my opinion, and I would say this if Lane or Warren or Bradley were on here, and all of which have been on our show, I would say to them, guys, I think you – as we're sitting here saying you need more cars, right? So the pressure on them is like, oh my gosh, we need to get more cars in here.
They're like, F you guys, it's not that
right.
easy.
It's not that easy, of course. And honestly, I think if I'm them, though, this is the advice I would give, and it's worthless advice because what the hell do we know? But I think you need to be really, really, really selective. And if you're only going to have a few cars on the site, I think they all have to be stuff like this. And that includes the GTI that they had and the Porsche. Those were all driver quality cars. A car that's a little rough is one thing, but it has to be a driver quality. They've had some cars on here that were just like, okay, you know, an automatic legend with 250,000 miles and it's beat to hell. Yes, it fits the it technically fits the criteria of being built between 1980 and 1999. But you gotta be more selective. You gotta have that doorman, and there was that situation a couple days ago or last week when, you know, you lost your S on that Miata because it had a crooked front, you know, thing. All right. Yeah. We found out that we're basically boomers, essentially, even though we're not. And that that's a thing by the youth culture. Okay, fine. You know, that thing, if that's going to be the case, if you're going to have a car like that, then it needs to be like right out there in front of everybody. It needs to be like this is a thing, you know, and then if you're going to accept one weird thing, then the pushback to the seller has to be, all right, well then clean the seats, take better pictures. If you're going to have a, if you're going to have a crooked, license plate frame, you better have everything else perfect. Otherwise we're not going to let you in. We'll let that slide because you have a reason for it, but all the other things, no, sorry, we're not selling your car here.
And then mention the plate, tell people, you know, this is who owns the car, you know? It's JP. How important is it for, you know, the Rad for Sale guys to get Radwood and the Rally under their belt in July? I mean, how important is July to them to get back into the frontal lobe of their audience's conscious, right?
Yeah. Yeah, because let's face it, Radwood, their business has model been has been kind of, they've been beaten up with what's going on. So they haven't been able to have a show, and their whole thing is have a show every month. So here it is.
Yep.
We are looking forward to being at the show. We will be there live casting, and we are, I can't
wait. Yeah, we're going to spread the good word. We're going to spread July the good word 10th. As best we can.
That's going to be awesome. Absolutely.
Join us July 10th. Come down to San Mateo and sign up, because I imagine there may be a limit on how many people they can get into the space. So sign up as early as you can.
It is already, I think, I don't want to say it's sold out because I don't want to discourage anyone from signing up. But I get in there. I know like their royalty passes are all up. So I think you can still get a car in there. And I'm sure as a spectator, you can still get in. But it's going to be a big, big show. And it's going to be awesome to see all our friends.
It's going to be really fun.
What else did we talk about yesterday?
All right, JP, two other cars on BAT. We found a 1992 Volkswagen Corrado SLC. Again, with just over 100,000 miles in this really cool dark burgundy pearl effect, just right down the road here in Palo Alto. That's like south of San Francisco Airport, close to Stanford. That's probably Crystal Springs Reservoir, which is just like you go across the water and up the hill there. It's a great drive to Alice's Restaurant, which I bet you've heard of as a motorcycle guy.
Yeah.
So I went 12 grand on this car because it's nice. It's all stock. It's in pretty original condition. It looks like it's been cared for. Somebody took photos like they were trying. I like this car. I'm like, and I still think 12 grand breaks my heart. I think the car should be worth more, but I figured 12 grand is where it's going to come. You went 11. Well, guess what? The car sold for 11.5 JP. We got a draw to start the week. So that was lot number one. And then we finished on a really weird note. This 2005 Pontiac GTO, which is funny because we look at it and immediately we're like, oh, an American car, what a heap. But you look at the spec, you look at some of the design elements, which I really enjoyed listening to your kind of, what did you call it? Minimalist, sympathetically done on the inside, that it was minimalist. The gauges are correct. It's just like, it's just a fair, normal car. And really interesting because Pontiac imported this car from Australia to bring it to the U.S. market. And it just was never a commercial success. But you're talking about independent suspension. It's a big coupe with a big V8 and a manual transmission and a limited slip diff. These are probably fun to drive, even if it's not the car you're jonesing for or want to be seen in if you're a Porsche or Volkswagen guy. Anyway, I like this one for 6,000 miles, and it's got it's the Gen 2 with the 6-liter V8, the LS2. So I said 33 grand, JP, thinking it might bring its original MSRP. You said 30. Our car sold at just $28,000. I still think, even though that might be a high watermark for a GTO in today's market, I still think it's a fair value for what I believe could wind up being a future collectible. But we'll see. Domestic cars from the boomers are in trouble. I mean, like, values are falling everywhere. So I don't know what the future is for a good American car when the next generation just wants to use an app to get driven around by somebody else. So we will see what the future holds for this car. But I still think it was pretty well bought at 28 grand. Congratulations to everybody there.
Yeah, that's a really cool car. Someone's going to have fun with it, and hopefully it gets driven. You know, hopefully this is one
you
of those cars that doesn't...
Coilovers and like, you take some mufflers out of that exhaust, what that car would sound like and how it might handle. That'd be fun.
I think its biggest problem is just this bright yellow, you know? I mean, if,
right.
it were, if it were a more subtle color, it's the kind of car that you could just really be a sleeper. But all right.
It's the car you drive if your dad is really important in town, and it doesn't matter. you'll never get a ticket because the cop knows your dad.
And then my dad owns a dealership.
Exactly. PhD. Papa has a dealership.
Oh, my word. All right. That was yesterday's cars. It's time to get to today's cars. That's right. These are the cars that are the most interesting cars of the day. So hit that subscribe, like, and notification button. These are the cars that we want you to go over to the respective auction platforms. And in the comments below, say that you saw that car on Bid Nerds on YouTube. Let everyone know that the nerds are out there. That's right. You got to scream it into your microphone. Nerds. Here it is. All right. You know, as usual, shockingly, we picked a Porsche to get things started off with. And this has got to be one of the best Porsches of all time. We've said it before. And undoubtedly,
JP,
we will say it again.
Look at this. Yeah. We should get Jeff Harley on the show and ask him to tell us where the hell King of Prussia is, Pennsylvania. But somebody there has, I mean, JP, this is kind of the holy grail of the modern, you know, like right at the turn of the century. What we're looking at is a 1996 Porsche 911 Carrera C4S Coupe in polar silver with chestnut brown, although it really looks like kind of a brick red to me. This is called chestnut brown interior leather upholstery. Just 19,000 original miles on this car. Now, it's not particularly badass spec. It doesn't seem to have a motor sound package, which would be the exhaust. It doesn't seem to have the adaptive sport seats, which would be the more heavily bolstered seats. It doesn't look like it has the thicker steering wheel or the shorter shift kit. But who cares? This thing is awesome. It's basically an unused C4S in silver on a full kind of red leather interior with just ridiculously low miles. Despite being all-wheel drive, these cars do drive and handle really well. JP, you can tell us how much fun you had driving a C4S just like this with a little bit of an aero kit when you filmed Porsche Road Trip, your show on Adam Carolla's platform. You drove, what'd you say, like 5,000 miles in one of these things, right? Over like a month.
This is one of the greatest
cars
of all time.
Look at this thing. Can you imagine that car that you drove had like, I remember it was like 60 or 80,000 miles. It was a really like high mile car that we had at Gotten Porsche that you used for the thing. But this one, it looks like it was hermetically sealed, JP. This is as nice a 993, any platform that we've ever covered on the show. And I think that this car is in for a huge finish because it's on Bring a Trailer and it's summertime. I mean, look at this thing. This is, I mean, God, could this be a $200,000 or $250,000 car? What do you think?
Man, I would like to see it get there. That would be unbelievable.
It'd be crazy.
For a C4S. I mean, we're seeing turbo 993s creeping over the 200 mark now with low miles.
Oh, yeah.
And this one in this kind of rare colorway. I love polar silver, one of my favorite color combinations. And this reddish interior, whatever you called it.
Chestnut.
I think chestnut goes perfectly with the car. And, yeah, this is a driver's car. The only thing I want in this car that it doesn't have... is the split grille. I'm really bummed to see that it has the standard grille. The split grilles look so good on the wide body.
But you could buy that part at your Porsche counter and retrofit it, JP, or do you have to go aftermarket?
I don't think they're available. I think you got to find a used one. Looks like this one has KW coilovers on it, too.
Nice.
Oh, my gosh. This is a driver's – this is the car.
That's a $3,000 value just for the parts. Yeah.
Frick. Yeah, this thing is – absolutely magnificent.
Yep.
You're going to have a great time driving this thing around. And I hope whoever buys it does just that. You know, you said it doesn't have the motor sound package, which frankly is fine because on a 993, the best thing to do is pull those rear cans. A lot of people will say go get Pfisters, and that's a great idea. But my suggestion is get the Fab Speed Super Cups, which are basically straight pipes off of the stock Gats.
Mm-hmm.
And it will sound better than any other 993 that you come up against.
This car is in Pennsylvania, so is Fab Speed. You could send this car to Philly, and Fab Speed will put them on for you, which is even better. That'd be a great little upgrade. JP, you had
Look
Fab Speed.
Look at the underside of this car.
I know. It's like museum quality. It's crazy. We're going to look at a car next week that's from Japan, where they did a video, and most of the video is just really well lit, super high def, slow like panning of the undercarriage of a Japanese exotic car that we're going to cover next week. Then it's the only car I've seen that's more exciting to look at underneath than this car right here. But for a car that's got 19,000 miles, this is really clean. It's a really well cared for car. You want this car. Yeah, if you could afford it, this is the one you want.
Did they say if the sway bar was upgraded? That looks like a bigger sway bar to me, but I don't know. All the drop links look stock. The only thing that looks... Yeah, whatever. No big deal. But and this car is just... Good Lord, this thing is good. You're right. This is the first time I've ever lingered on the underside pictures
of a car
before. I'm just like marveled at how clean this is. I wonder if they used one of those dry ice machines, Jason Alter.
Yeah.
That's probably what they did.
That's usually how they get the, oh my God, I can't think of this stuff. What's the Cosmoline? It's how they get the Cosmoline off. It's like cryogenically, you know, just spraying that stuff on it, and it just freezes it and brushes
just,
off with,
yeah,
the,
just
with like a
dust.
Power washer. Yeah, it freezes and blows off, and it's kind of a bummer.
Oh my gosh, this car. What a great, this is one of the best cars. And, you know, we've said it before, every time we talk about a 993 wide body, we refer to our friend the professor, Ben the Professor. You can see him in Porsche Road Trip. Quote is that the wide body 993 is commonly accepted as the pinnacle of human achievement in design.
That's right.
And that is, I have to agree.
That's astute. Yeah, the professor knows.
Where will this car land?
Last bit. This car was first registered in Alabama, and it was registered, ironically, in Alabama to a British Formula One driver named Jenson Button, who is actually younger than us, JP. Jenson, just absolute gossip here. Jenson wound up marrying a girl who lives here in the Bay Area. So I think Jenson splits his time in the Bay Area with a lovely native girl of San Francisco and is a father of two. So Jenson Button, shout out if you're watching the show. Your car is awesome, buddy. And, you know, welcome to San Francisco. There you go.
Man, why wouldn't you bring this car to San Francisco and just drive it for the next, well,
absolutely.
Why would you get rid of a car like this? Especially if you're a driver like that. Wow.
We should try and get him on the show. All right, so an hour and a half to go, JP, out of King of Prussia, Pennsylvania, with just 19,000 miles, is this 996 Vario RAM equipped C4S 6-speed manual. Hour and 30 minutes to go, JP. It's already up to $143,993, which, as if it closed right there, would be a high watermark. But I think this car is going to keep going. I'm going to say, you know, and look, sky's the limit for this thing. I'm just going to go $175,000 and see if you dare take the over.
Yeah, I'm going to go, I'll go 180. Because I think it's going to get darn close to 200 with this few miles. I mean, look, if it was one of those like crazy low miles, like if it were like collector miles, call it like, you know, a few hundred, you know, like 2000 or something like that, I think it would break 200. The 19,000 miles is just enough miles that somebody's like, all right, maybe I'll drive this thing. And here's a question for you. At $180,000, give or take, would you rather own and drive this car or a, let's say, 2019 GT3 with a manual, you know, like a GT3 Tourer?
Man. So the thing is, JP, you know, I bought a 991.1 GT3, and I had my name on a list for an RS, and so I never drove the GT3. But if the GT3 had been available with a stick, I never would have put my name on the list for an RS, and I would have kept the car. Mm-hmm. I got racing seats and ceramics, and I was as happy as a clam. So I was really bummed when they did bring the stick back with their new, you know, platform and all that sort of thing. So that's pretty tempting, JP. I have to tell you, as much as I love air cooled, I could fix up a mid-year and make it a really great driver and then still have a GT3 with a stick in my driveway. So I don't know. At 180 grand, I'd rather get a 993 cab and then have the GT3. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'd rather have one of each. I don't need a $180,000 993 platform car. I can get a really great driver that doesn't cost half that much. And then I'd still love to have a stick GT3 because I couldn't get one. My last two GT cars were not stick. So, I hate to say that. As much as I love my air-cooled, I'd probably go with the GT3 and then find a much cheaper way to enjoy the 993 platform.
There you go. That's there's your Who'd You Rather with mm-hmm. Michael Deeb and 9/11s. All right. Let's see what else. There's a bunch of other interesting cars today.
Yeah. Just seven bids on that car at $143,000. But I think that the collectors are going to come out of the woodwork for this thing, JP. Yeah. I think you're going to win that lot. So which one do you want to do next?
Doesn't matter.
Okay, let's start on P-Car Market. We may see a representative from P-Car Market later this week, so tune in where we can kind of put the microphone in their mouth and let them tell us how bad we are at our own
there's
game.
There's a bit of an announcement, and I think we can go ahead and say that. Jim Barry's going to be on the show on Thursday. Jim Barry from P-Car Market Live will be on Bid Nerds. You heard it right. He's coming here. He is here to defend the honor of P-Car Market, and we look forward to having a true expert on the show for a change.
You got to hand it. Whoever the intern was that put this whole thing together, because you know that's how it worked, right? Somebody younger than the people that you know have all the power and responsibility at P-Car Market were like, you know, these guys talk about you all the time. You got to appreciate them being good sports and putting this together. And anybody from that building that agrees to come on the show, we pick on P-Car Market more than anything else. And it's because they have Porsche in the title, and you and I love Porsche so much. So anytime it's not perfect, we're like, aah! And the fact that they are going to come on the show and defend their honor. We are very excited to have Jim Barry coming on the show. What, Thursday, JP?
Thursday, yeah. I wish there was a way we could digitally just buy him a beer. How awesome would it be if we could just like hit an app and then whoop, a beer shows up? Because kudos to them for saying, yeah, you know what? Let's do this. Yeah. Let's go.
Let's overnight them an edible arrangement and see if he'll put it in the background when he's on the show.
That's a good idea. I love it. There's a big P-car or a big Bid Nerd sign.
Yeah, tennis ball. Everything has to be green. And it's got to be round, so it looks like the Bid Nerd logo, right? And
then they wouldn't want to, you know, slum up their fancy. They got a badass place. We have a dump. All right. Okay. So what is so P-Car Market? They've got P-Car in their name. They're all about the Porsches. We love to make fun of their East Coast accent. I'm from New Jersey. What am I doing? Here it is. This is not a P-Car. What the heck is this thing?
Yeah, but it's from Stuttgart, JP. Come on, it's a four-door Porsche. This is Panamera version 1.0, otherwise known as the 1999 Mercedes-Benz E55 AMG. Now, you and I have covered a couple of E55s from this platform, W210, that had like 30 and 40,000 miles, JP, and we saw those cars break $40,000, which has got to be a high watermark. So I would say because of those interesting results on BAT, I'm not surprised that we're getting more W210 platform E55s come to market. The interesting thing about this one is that it's on P-Car Market, not BAT, and our car, despite being in Los Angeles, has 154,000 miles on the odometer. The car looks to be in very nice condition, which is common in LA because LA is so much freeway driving. It is possible to have 150,000 miles on a car and the car not show that much signs of wear and tear because it's not a lot of stop go. It's not a lot of parking. There's just a lot of free miles. You're just droning on in traffic. So this is I think common in Southern California, especially Los Angeles, where this car is located. It's bone stock. It looks to be in very nice cosmetic condition for its age. And these were great cars. Records are said to be including dating back to 2010 and show $22,000 worth of service from 2010. So JP, as they've mentioned this, that the consignor disclosed this, does that hurt the value that in 11 years you had to spend $22,000? Basically, you can expect whatever your payment is on the car or whatever check you stroke to buy this thing, that you're basically looking at 11 years worth of proof that it's $2,000 a year to maintain this vehicle. Would that scare you away, or does that diminish the value knowing you're going to spend that kind of money for the next however many years you own it? Look, they're really nice cars. It's a normally aspirated big V8. This is kind of a muscle car from Germany. I always liked them because I this was early on in the marriage between AMG and Mercedes. This is one of the first, you know, sort of results of that relationship. A very cool car, and then the cars got cooler still. But I don't know. I might like these more than most of our audience. What do you think? What's going on here, JP?
Yeah, I mean, the E55 is a monster because it's got those, I mean, yeah, it's got all that extra power and stuff. Yeah. But unfortunately...
350, 400, 350 horsepower, 400 torque. It's a big, that's muscle car, you know?
Yeah, and with this kind of miles, you can definitely expect more high maintenance costs. That engine, that platform, you know, it's getting all that bang, but it is not necessarily bang for the buck. You're definitely going to have to pay for it. But you know, these are excellent driver cars. Look, I own one of these. I have a W210. I have, mine's an E430 Sport. So mine is the V8. That's kind of our daily driver. Ours is not nice like this one. Ours is kind of beat up. But that car really has been exceptionally reliable because it doesn't have the boost. You know, it's not forced induction. So it really that thing just goes and goes and goes and goes. It's Honda reliability, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
And it has a lot of poop. It has so much torque. You have no problem getting on a freeway on-ramp. The difference between the E430 Sport and this, other than the power, is that I think this one has some suspension upgrades too, given that it's an AMG, whereas the...
Right. Yeah, the brakes, suspension. Yeah.
The E430 Sport really is just cosmetics. It really doesn't have any, there's no difference in the suspension. It's just as squishy as a regular one.
Yeah, the dampening is the same, but the Sport meant that it got, the bodywork from this car, and then it got a higher rated tire. So instead of like an all season, it would have like a sport tire. And to Mercedes, that was enough. Whereas in the same era, JP, if you check the box that said Sport on a BMW, I mean, your car was completely transformed as a driver's car. Way different dampening, different material in the brake pads, different material in the wheel construction. I mean, you hit Sport in BMW, and it really stood for something. But with Audi and Mercedes, it didn't. Sport was a cosmetic upgrade. It was very much a poser option to pick because your car didn't really drive any different, which I always thought was a bummer. But this is a really neat car, and I love that they, you know, shoehorned this big 5.4 liter normally aspirated V8, and that this thing was just kind of a beast. So it's nice to see a nice one, and it's interesting to see where a Mercedes with high miles will fare on a Porsche themed website. And you know, we've also ribbed them for having much more success with cars that were, you know, really on the Eastern Seaboard versus a car that's way out here in California. So JP, with 2.5 hours to go, sitting on just 3 bids, you think this consignor is stressing? Our car is looking at $10,000 with a few hours to go. So JP, I figured if a low mile car can break 40 grand, this car could get to 15. It's not showing the signs, but I don't want to change my bid. So I'm going to say that this car gets, you know, another 4 or 5 bids and gets up to 14 or 15 grand. But I'm going to leave my bid at 15,000 and see where you come in.
Yeah, I'm going to go under. It's kind of a peculiar place for this car to be sold, and it is on the West Coast. And that's not always consistent with P-Car market. It's just
right.
One of the things. It seems like West Coast cars don't do as well. I'm going to go 14. I'm going to bet the under. It's a really nice car, but it's really high miles. I mean, it's almost 160,000 miles on a car that is kind of complex. And as evidence with the maintenance records, as you astutely pointed out, you're probably going to have more maintenance records after that.
Quick question, JP. Black car, which I know you love, mostly black interior, but the center of the seats are white leather, and half of the steering wheel is the top of the steering wheel is also white leather. Sorry, I sounded like Elma Fudd. But anyway, what do you think of the two-tone interior? I personally, more often than not, I hate two-tone interiors. I really like, you know, pick a color and stick with it. What do you think of the two-tone interior on the E55 W210? Yay or nay, buddy?
Yeah, I would certainly prefer it all black, but I don't hate it. Did they call this Designio at that point, or was that?
I don't remember. I think the Designio, if it wasn't a Designio, Designio showed up right after.
This is
a 99. I think Designio showed up like 1 or 2 years later. I don't think this is Designio.
Because I think the last generation SLs had it. It also has a crack in the dash, which is kind of weird.
That's a bummer. It's hot in LA.
Yeah,
it doesn't say Designio, but that might be a Designio interior. I don't know.
Yeah. I like the look generally with the two tone, but again, I'm totally with you. I'd worry whether I have it all black. Oddly enough, I have a steering wheel that this person needs. I have a. On my 430, it's actually it's a Brabus steering wheel on my E430 Sport. And the top is wood. But it's all ergonomic. And it's just like, you know, it was probably a $2,000 steering wheel at some point.
And the car's worth $3,500.
Yeah, exactly. If that, I've got the stock steering wheel. I should just get the stock steering wheel put back on it and sell that Brava steering wheel to whoever buys this
E55. You can find bucks for it.
Yeah, because that would definitely be the right steering wheel to put in this car.
Too funny.
All right. Neat car. Good luck to everyone involved. What else we got?
All right, JP. Let's look at a 1983 Mercedes on BAT. This is a Mercedes. I picked this car for you, JP. So this is a Mercedes-Benz 280 SL from 1983. Now, I don't think they brought 280 SLs with a six-cylinder in 83. They did, I think, when the cars first came out, when the isn't this the 107 platform, I think? Anyways, when these cars first came out, you could get it with a six-cylinder, eight-cylinder. And then by the time the 80s rolled around, you could get it with a small V8 or a big V8. This Euro example is an inline six, and it's in the United States. It's in Golden, Colorado. But the reason why I picked this car, JP, is because it's got 90,000 miles. It's a 2.8-liter inline six, and it's got a five-speed manual transmission. Plus, it's got these really great houndstooth-centered seats, which I just love. And so this is just a neat unobtainium example that we didn't have for sale in the U.S. that's here on some sort of exemption for sale in the United States. So even though it's true mileage unknown, showing 91,000 miles out of Golden, Colorado, here's the 107 platform with a six-cylinder and a five-speed manual. Just a great little car. I bet this thing is probably pretty fun to drive, because whatever suspension they put on the American cars, the suspension on the European cars would have been firmer and the car would have sat lower. In fact, if you look at the photos, the main photo of this car, the fender wells on both the front and rear tire come down over the tire. I mean, this car looks like it's been lowered. And I bet the stick is, you know, again, it's not a pure sports car. It's not going to rival even an early 911. But just as a car for what it is, I bet this thing's probably pretty fun to drive. So, JP, any love for a houndstooth manual transmission early SL? Would you rock this car for a couple weeks before you flipped it for profit? I certainly
would.
Hell
yeah. I
think this thing is super radwood, if you ask me. Yeah. That houndstooth is like, I mean, that's all the money right there. Give me that. Yeah. Come on, man. I'll take
it. That's what's funny. It's like these cars from this era, you know, when the Europeans, when they said, okay, we're going to make a car that is less expensive, we're not going to have all the leather trim, we're not going to have all the extra stuff, that wound up being better because it made it more period correct. I mean, that interior, the cloth interior, anytime you're going to do a cloth interior, the Europeans aren't going to do just like a black interior. They're going to have some pattern on it, and that pattern will reflect the current sensibilities, and that's what makes something period. And you know, I just, if it were the higher trim, it would be all black, and you know, okay, that's cool, but it's not interesting really. So I love to say,
pull up a picture of the grill of that car. If you can get any picture of the front end of that car as we're signing off on it, I just want to show you one more detail that didn't come stock in the U.S. And that's the four round headlights. So our cars had just square headlights with projector beams in there. But the European cars showed you the four rounds. And a lot of people that have, I think, taste in the U.S. will opt for the European headlight conversion to their U.S. domestic market, SLs. But that car's got it because it's a Euro version. This is also a no reserve lot at JP. So anyways, really cool car.
Where's it going to land? What do we think?
JP, our car has 2 hours and 17 minutes, and it's just under 10 grand at $9,700 on a respectable 17 bids. Again, out of Golden, Colorado, again showing about 100,000 miles, but true mileage unknown. It could be 200,000 miles, but the car looks like it's in fair to decent condition, and it's even got a hard top. So you get this convertible soft top that stows under that hard tonneau. And then it also has a hardtop that you could hoist in your garage and put on the car if you were like Seattle bound and you want to drive your car year round. You can make this a coupe. So I love this thing. It doesn't, it's not a valuable car. It's not going to break the bank. It's not even going to come anywhere near $20,000. But this example with the stick, we just don't have. Early 70s SLs with the smaller motor were available with a four-speed in the U.S., but an 83 with a five-speed is pure unobtainium. And I think that car has a chance to bring $17,000. I might be high on it because I want the seats, but I'm going to stick by my bid, JP. Where are you at?
I'm going to say 15,000. I think the car is really, really cool. It's really neat, but it's a little obscure. I don't know how big the enthusiast market for this generation of SLs are. I mean, I know there's some people out there. You know, Lane Skelton from Rad for Sale, his family was really into these. Would have been good to have him on and talk about it because he seems to be a pretty big wealth of knowledge on this. I think most of the people that like these cars are going to want the bigger motor and all the, you know, better stuff. This one having a manual and less power definitely fits the criteria for me, but I don't know if it does for other people. So
In junior high, my dad had a 380 SL, like a 79. So the 380 was an aluminum blocked V8, but the smaller V8, it wasn't the 450, was the bigger motor, but it was an SL. And it was like a dark brown metallic with a black dash and tan seats. And I, you know, that car was just fun to be in. Mm-hmm. And he had it for a while. And then when I got to high school, he bought a BMW 528 with a 4-speed manual. But my dad had an SL, and I thought that was like the coolest car. And it was neat, you know. I've always had a soft spot for them. I don't crave to drive them, but I do appreciate them. All kinds of nostalgia. Cool car, cool lot. JP, I picked another car for you. Look at this thing. Do you remember the Scrambler?
Heck yeah.
Check it out, JP. You are going to get me into a Jeep one of these days, one way or another. I think this is neat. Is this not the spiritual godfather of today's Gladiator? It's an 82 Jeep CJ8 Scrambler. It doesn't say which version or trim level of the Scrambler it is, but maybe you know by looking at the images. This car looks like it's been repainted. But the Scrambler is considered a pickup. It's not considered a Jeep. And then it's got a black hardtop on it and a roll bar. It's got tubular side steps and a winch. It's got 33-inch tires. It's showing 106,000 miles, but they say true mileage unknown. And it's got, I think, the right engine, JP. It's got the 4-point-something liter inline six.
Yeah, well, it was a 283 or something like that. They didn't call it a 4.2 at that point.
Yeah, still, it's actually like a 4.3 inline six. I did the conversion to figure out what it was because I didn't like the cubic inches. I put 4.2, but it's 4.22 something or whatever. Anyway, 115 horsepower, 210 pound of torque. That's the motor. And it's out of Lisley, Illinois. 82 Scrambler with a paint job and some graphics. I mean, it's certainly a looker, even if it's not. Even if it's a 10-footer, JP, I still admire that they put a coat of paint on it, and it looks nice. And you know, Jeeps just continue to hold their value, and they continue to be fun recreational vehicles. And depending on where you live, you could drive this thing all the time. I mean, in Vegas, would this not be a great ride to have for three quarters of the year?
Yeah, I mean, the Scramblers really are fantastic. They are way more rare than a CJ7. A CJ8 is kind of the I don't know. I'm not going to say it's the thing to have, but I would still personally, the CJ7 is more, I don't know. To me, a Jeep, I don't want, it's kind of like, I don't want a pickup truck. I want a Jeep. That's why I got a Jeep. But I am somewhat in the minority. People really, really love these Scramblers, and they are fun to have that extra, you know, space in the back. You know,
utility.
It makes the wheelbase.
But it's a 2-seater only, though.
Yeah, correct. And the longer wheelbase makes it not quite as good for off-roading and stuff like that. But who cares? Whatever. This thing is still a goat. It still has the lockers. Yeah. I mean, this thing is just going to be so much fun. And the Scrambler, I mean, really what this is not the precursor to the Gladiator, even though Gladiator is the Wrangler with a truck bed. It's more the precursor to the Unlimited, you know, in having the longer wheelbase and more storage.
Interesting.
Capacity.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good take because it's platform, right?
The first Unlimited Wrangler was in the TJ, and that wasn't a four-door. And then when they came out with the Unlimited in the JK in 2007, that was the first four-door extended, and that was the Jeep that basically changed the world for Jeep. I mean, you got to think that the Jeep Wrangler JK pretty much saved Chrysler, because what the hell else does Chrysler have other than maybe Hellcats or something? But this thing, I don't know. I think it's better than a 10-footer. I think it's pretty darn nice. I mean, you know, the sticker, the graphics package is period correct, or they painted around it or something like that. I mean, it's This yeah, looks good. It looks pretty cool. Good. Most scramblers, since there weren't a lot of them, they all got pretty roached out. And this one appears to be great. That engine is very reliable, although the carburetors in this era were gummed up with a lot of emissions, vacuum hoses and vacuum lines, and so they can run pretty poorly if you don't have someone that knows what they're doing. I think the thing that's most amazing about this is it looks like it's retained its original wooden cargo slots on the back.
It's not an aftermarket thing. That came from the manufacturer.
Yeah, you could get those back in the day. So that's
got to be a great trivia question. Is like, how many cars are still using wood in their construction?
Right. Those bumper, the rear bumper and the Nerf bars are definitely aftermarket though. And it's cool. Yeah. It's got a winch on the front. There's some utility.
It's got a high lift. It's got a high lift jack on board with the car, so you really can't get that tire off, the 33-inch tire off. The roll bar JP, would that have been stock?
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Anyway, neat car. I don't know the values of these, JP. I was looking at it last night at $14,000 on 10 bids, thinking this car, by condition and lower miles and just rarity, I haven't seen a lot of scramblers come to market. Where we've seen other Jeeps doing well, the scrambler seems like maybe they made less of them.
Absolutely, way fewer of them. Yeah.
So I was thinking this car could go to $24,000. But as we're looking at this car with 2.5 hours to go out of Illinois, it's still sitting at $14,500, and therefore, I wonder if it's even going to make it to $20,000. So, JP, I'm shooting in the dark. I'm just going to say $20,000, and that's only because I just don't know what I'm talking about.
How many hours are left on this thing?
2.5 out of Illinois.
Yeah, I'd be shocked if this thing doesn't get darn near 30.
Oh, really? So you think my 24 bid was good?
Yeah, I do. In fact, I'll take it because
you chicken shit.
These are super rare, and this one's in nice shape, and people want these more than CJ7s. And CJ7s
are going. Are there a little demand for these things, even if they're not as usable or the shorter wheelbase?
When I say they're not as usable as a CJ7, that's marginally. I mean, that's just
extreme.
Basically,
that's the extreme.
Yeah. This is incredibly useful. I mean, this is still an amazing goat. I don't mean greatest of all time, but I mean goat, like it'll crawl over everything. It just has a slightly longer wheelbase. Whatever. And our friends 3PP up there, 3-Pedal Posse in the Northwest, they were doing a monthly or quarterly car show in front of the Elsom Sellers Winery there. There's a guy up there, I think he calls himself like the DJ Scrambler, and he has a mobile DJ set up with speakers in the back of one of these. And awesome. And they print t-shirts and stuff like that. So, and with these period correct stripes and stuff like that, heck yeah, this thing should be this should be a $35,000 Wrangler. But I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if it's going to be slow. In Illinois, I don't know. You got to go get it. It doesn't have AC, so that means you're going to have to ship it back. You're probably not going to want to drive it back to wherever because it's really hot. But then again, I don't know. Be an enthusiast, man. Get this car and drive it wherever it goes. My Wrangler that's coming up on cars and not cars and bids, but Rad for Sale. Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and plug my Wrangler. It's funny because my Wrangler will not get anywhere near what this thing will get. My Wrangler is a 92 YJ with 38,000 original miles.
Original miles.
And it's in way nicer shape than this. And that thing, it's yeah.
But JP, isn't your Jeep in an unusual color?
Not at all. It is in the least unusual color for a Wrangler.
Why do you think they painted them all red? Why did they paint them all red?
Jurassic Park. I don't know. Well, there is a reason why Jeeps typically are bright colors, or at least they used to be.
Tell us. That's a great take. I love this story.
It's very common to see CJ5s and CJ7s in bright blues or orange or reds or any of those colors because
green.
Yeah, if you roll off the trail and down a hill, they want to be able to find you from a helicopter or an airplane. Yeah. And if you're green or black or whatever, they're not going to be able to do it. So if you intend to take your vehicle, your off-road vehicle off-road, get a bright color one.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Life. There you go.
Yeah. All right, JP, last car, and I have to say, my Uncle Sam, my dad's older brother, in San Mateo County, not far from where we're going to do the Radwood, worked at a Lotus dealership, and he sold Volkswagen and Lotus in, San Mateo County. And so when I was in high school, my uncle was selling Lotuses. And all I kept thinking was, if I got good grades, my dad would buy me a Lotus. Of course, I smoked weed in high school too. So none of that made sense. It never added up. First of all, I didn't get good grades, and there was never anybody going to buy me a Lotus. But I just kept thinking, man, how cool would it be? I really liked these cars because it seemed like they were close to home, because my uncle sold them for a short period of time. So this car is right in that wheelhouse. It's an 89 Lotus Esprit Turbo. Now, it's not a special edition, which was a really cool colorway of green and yellow. But this does have the same 2.2 liter inline four that makes like 210 horsepower and like 215 pound foot of torque. Our car is offered out of Conway, South Carolina, and has just 3,800 original miles.
Whoa.
Very cool car with VDO gauges and OZ Italian 15-inch wheels. I think they're just sixes in the front, but eights in the back. And it's just an exotic car. And this is all on the heels. This was like the .2 version of the Turbo after the .1 that was much more squared off had made appearances in consecutive James Bond films in the early 80s. The 89 had much more, it had kind of like the 964 treatment to the bumpers, JP, where it looked more integrated into the bodywork. And the air tunnel, the wind tunnel played a role in shaping the front and underside of this car. So very exotic car, JP. Have you ever sat in one of these? It's very much like a Lamborghini Countach that from the steering wheel, the angle of the windshield and the angle of the front trunk are almost a straight line from the roof line to the front bumper down to the curb. It's very exotic. It's very short. It's very low. And they're British, so they're very problematic. We don't recommend, JP and I would never recommend you go out and buy one. But if you had to have one, I think this would be the one to have. JP, it looks like it's in really nice condition. It looks unused. It looks like the miles are authentic. I wouldn't recommend buying this and running it, expecting to get you home. I feel like these cars would be very temperamental and very problematic, and it would be an extreme endeavor to find a competent and integrous British mechanic that knew his way around this car. But man, that's cool. I talk about rad with JP. I really liked the shape of this car. I think it's a pretty car. But it scares me. It really does scare me. So 4 hours to go, JP, out of Conway, South Carolina, the Lotus Esprit Turbo. Now, you took me to my first second Radwood. We went to the one in L.A. at the Peterson Auto Museum, on the roof of the Peterson Auto Museum. Magnus Walker showed up in a red Lotus Esprit. Do you remember that?
I don't. No, that's interesting. Yeah, I don't
remember. Yeah, he showed up, and it was, I think, his first ever British car. And I predicted then, I was saying to you and Rami, I was like, oh, man, he's such a tastemaker. I bet Esprits come to market because people will pay a premium to be like Magnus Walker. I stand by that.
Yeah, I don't. I think he's like, he goes out and basically, at this point, it's over. You know, he was for a minute, but he kind of overdid it.
Over.
He's overplayed it. Nobody cares what Magnus Walker is driving. I mean, they've got that show.
Magnus Walker jumped the shark.
Yeah, he really, really did. And I still like the guy's cool and everything like that, but I don't think that if he buys something, then the next day everyone's out running out trying to get it. But this car, these are freaking cool. I've always loved the way they looked. One of my favorite movies of all time. I mean, it is not arguable to say that this isn't the best movie ever. If looks could kill, with Booker, what was that actor's name? I can't remember that actor's name. But this, that car was so badass in that movie back in the early 90s. Mm-hmm. I want one, but they are hunks of crap, and there's no way around it.
My love affair with this car is super shallow, and I just want to drive this car for a day. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to own it, but I would love to. Like, if we were out and somebody had one, and they're like, hey, Deeb, you want to drive the next leg? That would be perfect. I really want to drive one and see what it's like. And then give it back.
Well, what was it, about a year and a half ago, almost 2 years ago now, we were tipped off on there was a fella way out in the desert, out in Sandy Valley or whatever, that had Porsche engines and stuff like that. And
so we went
out to
stuff.
See, he had 914 stuff. So we went out to see what he had, and, you know, he opened up his hangar And under one of the covers, among many other cars, he happened to have one of these. It wasn't 3,800 miles, but I remember not having that many miles. It was like only 20 something. But of course, it didn't run, and you know,
we should go see him.
Yeah, I wonder if he still has that car. But even that, I mean, he was like, "Yeah, I'll sell it to you for like 15 grand." Even I was like, "I don't want." I mean, that you could be. These were cheap for so long. It's not like these cars were cheap, so everybody bought them and rushed them out. They were cheap because nobody wanted one. And everyone knew that every time you turn the ignition, you might be blowing something.
Totally.
Just not reliable. The very last version of this car had an 8-cylinder, and I think
that's
the
twin
one
turbo
you probably want.
350 horsepower,
Yeah, look at that deck. I'm most excited about that stereo. I had one of those that Sony pull-out stereo. That was the thing to have and carry over your shoulder in the mall. Yeah, I have driven these. I've driven them quite a bit. My first job, one of my first jobs was as a, in the car business, was I was a sales puke at a little crazy crappy car lot and on Lake City Way in Seattle, Washington up there. You know, we sold used beaters that people traded into the other lots that the company owned, one of which was a Lotus, was a Lotus franchise. So it was not uncommon for me to have to go over to the Lotus store to pick something up. And every now and then, since I was the lowest man on the totem pole, someone was like, "Hey, drive one of these over to Mercer Island or drive it to the shop or drive it to wherever."
Fun.
And I was like, "Hell yeah, I was happy to do it."
That's cool.
Terrifying to drive because you know, being a short guy, I couldn't see out of that thing. Like if I had to go backwards, it was like, hope driving, put it in reverse, hope I don't hit anything. Because I'm not even going to look over my shoulder. There's no use. Whatever. Look, I'm going backwards. Get out of my way.
That's so funny.
Look at that crappy heat shield for the turbo. It's just a piece of freaking aluminum.
JP, do you see where it looks like the sunroof is open on this car? It's not a sunroof. It's just a roof panel that pops off. And I don't even know I don't even know if there's room on the car to store it. Like you take that off. Look, it's on the floor over there. It's on the floor. I think you leave it in the garage and you go out with the roof open and that's it. You're stuck like that. I mean, what a just such a backwards ass design. I wouldn't be surprised if the 89 Esprit Turbo was made on a factory in England where the floor of the factory was still dirt. Like that's how
entirely,
old. Yeah, it's still so old fashioned back there.
Well,
so,
where's this
anyway.
One going to land? What's this is Radwood. This would be so Radwood.
It
what,
would really it'd be so cool for that. So JP,
if you
our car
get the
is
car
at,
to get there.
Yeah. This car is sitting at $25,250 with 4 hours to go on 21 bids. So people are looking at it. Last night, I put 45 grand. I don't know that it's going to get quite that high, but I do think this car has a chance to bring $40,000 because where are you going to find another one with less than 4,000 miles that really is cosmetically, at least, really well looked after? You know, the guy brags about in the listing here of starting the car every day, but or like every week, and letting it warm up and then rolling it back and forwards, but bragging about never having driven it. And I feel like he would have done well to put 500 miles on this car every year instead of just letting it sit in his garage. So I do wonder about, you know, any kind of reliability with this car. So anyway, I'll leave it at 45,000 in the name of fairness, but I'm not confident in my bid. So where you at?
I was hoping you were going to get off of that bid because I think that's really good. I'll go over. I think this car has so few miles.
You too. All right.
Yeah, I'll go just barely over. I'll go 46. I don't think it breaks 50.
Yeah.
But this, I mean, they really are beautiful. They really are of a period that everybody, you know, is looking for cars of this era. And look, if you buy a Lotus Esprit, you're going to buy it and then spend anywhere from $5,000 to $25,000 in maintenance on this car within the first 6 months if you do it, if you drive it at all, right? So if you're going to have to do that, if you're going to have to, you know, stroke that check, you may as well do it on one that has 3,500 miles as opposed to 15,000 miles or 100,000 miles, which you never really see these with 100,000 miles because I don't think any of them ever made it that far.
No, they'll catch fire before they get there.
Yeah, yeah. So, I think this car is a collector car. It has low enough miles, and this is exactly the kind of thing that BAT does well with. This is the kind of car that you would want to see on Rad for Sale. But I think, you know, I don't know if the audience there has the money for it. So obviously BAT, really is the place to get the most money for something like this. If you're going to get it.
True. True. JP, how's that for an eclectic group of cars? We had a Mercedes sedan, we had a Porsche C4S air-cooled, we had a Mercedes convertible, a Jeep, and a exotic Lotus Esprit. I mean, that's pretty good, right? That's a show, right, man.
That's a lot of that's why we're the most interesting cars of the day in all the automotive enthusiast auction sites. We have a guest tomorrow, yeah?
Oh, we do. Jay Lamb, syndicated legendary motor journalist and the spiritual czar of the 24 Hours of Le Mans Endurance Series, which is and has been since he started it, the largest endurance racing series on the planet for the last, I think he's been doing it. Got it, JP, we got to ask him tomorrow on the show, but I think he's been doing Le Mans for nearly 20 years now, which is crazy to think it's been that long. Have you ever gone out and seen those guys run? It is hilarious.
It's awesome. I would really like to participate hilarious. In that sometimes.
Bittner's should run a car that looks like a big tennis ball. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Our friends over at Everyone Racers, those guys are big into the Le Mans racing and stuff like that.
Absolutely.
Shout out to those guys. You guys should be watching tomorrow's show, apparently.
Jay Lamb. John Jay Lamb. And then, JP, here's an interesting bit of trivia. Jay lives across the bay. He's here in the Bay Area. He took a big chunk of the library of books in his collection. I guess he's retiring or moving into a smaller place. He put his, a couple hundred books on BAT. And guess how much his library of automotive books sold for? Let's say it was 200 books. On BAT just a couple of weeks ago.
No idea.
$60,000.
Wow.
That's incredible, wow. Right? I mean, you've got to be some kind of celebrity if people are buying your books for, nearly six figures. So we'll have to tease him about that because I guarantee you he's going to have a laugh about that number. There's no way he thought he was going to get even $20,000 for his books. There's no way. So, I mean, that's an amazing result. We'll have to give him shit on the show tomorrow. So, Jay Lamb, tune in tomorrow. He's great. JP, you're going to like him a lot.
I am looking forward to that, as well as, of course, Jim Barry over there. There's the best movie of all time. If Looks Could Kill. There you go, guys. Go find it on Netflix. Looking forward to having some Third Nerds here for the next couple days, and look forward to some other great cars coming up. Thanks so much for joining us. I guess we're all done for the day, yeah?
Yeah, say goodbye.
We will see you guys.
Get the nerds!